caught up in danger in the middle of the storm. Hey, trying to run away from the fear, the lies, and the dark. Time to fight back, no turning back from the lion den that attacks. I'm a champion, a survivor. But we'll never, ever back down.
I'll survive. Get my back against the wall. I'll survive. If I call a big man tonight, I'll survive. Until the end of time, I'm a fighter.
Hello and welcome to Strong to Survive, and thank you for tuning into our podcast. Today we are talking about the issue of domestic violence through the lens of the male victim. I am joined with Julie Rivas, the CEO of Sandulay International. Sandulay International is an international advocacy group and also the parent organization of Strong to Survive. We discuss several topics regarding the issue of domestic violence through the lens of male victims. We go through all the myths as well as safety tips for those who are in abusive relationships. We are so glad that you are listening to us, and if you want, you can subscribe via iTunes. Just look up Strong to Survive in iTunes. Thanks again and have a great day.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Strong to Survive radio show. You are joining myself, Eric Lundin. I'm the president of Strong to Survive, as well as Julie Rivas, the CEO of SDIAG, which stands for Sandulay International Advocacy. Julie, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you, Eric, for having me. And as you stated, my name is Julie Rivas, and I'm just very glad to be here.
Well, welcome. We're glad to have you. Sandulay is the mother organization of Strong to Survive, and we're very honored to have Julie with us today. Our topic today is domestic violence, and we're going to be looking at it through the lens of the male victim and intimate partner violence as it pertains to the male victim. We're going to be covering several topics, and we will be taking questions. If you're listening on the line live, you can press 5-star to raise your hand, and we'll be able to see that you have a question, and we'll be able to unmute you so that you can ask that question. If you don't feel comfortable with that and you want to ask anonymously, you can tweet us at StrongTOSurvive. And we'll be able to see that as well. So the first thing we want to talk about is just the general scope of domestic violence as it pertains to male victims. And it's kind of a taboo subject, especially in the field of domestic violence, and especially as it pertains to research. There's not a lot of research out there about male victims of domestic violence. And if you've listened to several of our podcasts, the most recent podcast we had with Dr. Songin, he mentioned the fact that we're kind of in the infancy stages of understanding what it means to be a male victim of domestic violence. The researchers are just now starting to get a glimpse of what that looks like and what the picture looks like across the country. And we're almost kind of where women were 30 years ago at understanding kind of what that looks like for male victims. So. But there was a big study conducted by the CDC in 2010 that is kind of controversial. It says that 40% of all domestic violence victims were men. So that's a big number. 40% of all severe physical violence victims in the country were men. That's pretty shocking.
Yeah, it is.
So, you know, I think if we consider that, that's probably not even including the ones who don't report. And when we're talking about men reporting, and we've talked about this in other shows, especially, you know, when it comes to sexual assault and other issues, men have a tendency to not report when they've been assaulted. I think this is even more true when it comes to physical violence. And there are several factors that kind of play into this. There are a lot of programming that go into being a boy and being a man, things that you're raised to believe, like you need to be strong and you need to tough things out and fight your own battles and, you know, don't be a wimp. All these things that you're told as a young man that carry over into your life. So if you are, say, a grown man and you're being beaten up by your wife or girlfriend, it's a little embarrassing, to say the least, to call the police to report that. So there's a fear of being perceived as weak and being emasculated. There's also ridicule from law enforcement or other agencies. And then, so I kind of want to just talk about that for a while. And I know there's a lot of stigma around this because men in general don't like to be perceived as weak. And we were talking offline, Julie and I, about, you know, kind of the masks that and the personas that men create about being tough. And if you're being physically abused by somebody who's perceived as weaker than you, it's really kind of difficult for, I think, for a guy to kind of come forward about that. Do you have any thoughts on this, Julie?
Yeah, I mean, as Eric was saying, I completely agree with you. It's, you know, with young men or boys, as, you know, as early as they can start walking, you often find parents, especially fathers, you know, they're big on, oh, you don't cry, you don't do these things, you don't do those things. And then, you know, also culturally, it depends on what statistics say about them, how men are supposed to be. And every kind of, you know, sort of culture has a different viewpoint on how men are supposed to be built. You know, a lot of people do think that men or boys aren't supposed to cry, which I think is just a horrible thing. But that's the first thing that society puts out there. Like, you're not supposed to cry. You're not supposed to be weak. But men are the male figures, are just as much as individuals as women are. So, you know, I completely agree with what you're saying.
And then the other part of it, I think, is that there's the other side of the coin where boys are taught to never hit girls. And I'm not advocating violence against women when I say this. But what I'm trying to get across is that there may be situations where a woman is being physically violent against the man and the man isn't retaliating and he isn't defending himself because he's been taught it's never acceptable for him to hit a woman or to defend himself in any way. And so he just sits there and takes it. And this actually is pretty common according to a lot of statistics from some of the helplines that I've researched into where, you know, the man feels like he just has to sit there and take the abuse, you know, because he is supposed to be stronger, but he's not allowed to defend himself. And so, and if he calls the police, he'll be laughed at, and, or he will either be laughed at or he'll be arrested and told that he's the one who, you know, is being abusive. And so there's a lot of interesting things going on here, and it's very difficult to navigate as a male victim because they're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. They don't really have the resources available to reach out for help because, one, they're less likely to be believed. Two, if they need a place to go, there aren't as many places for them to go. And three, they're more likely to be laughed at and or called a perpetrator than their female counterparts in the situation. So these are just some difficult you know, challenges that are unique to male victims. And it's something that I think we need to talk about and look at, because I don't know what the answer is to fixing these issues, just bringing them out in the open and looking at them and saying this is a problem and we need to talk about it and figure out a way to deal with it.
Yeah, I agree.
And then, you know, this is typical with female victims as well, is fear of retaliation from their partner. So they don't want to come forward because they're afraid if they do, when they go back, if they go back, it's going to be worse. So how about, do you have any other thoughts about why men don't report?
I mean, with those, with what you listed also, but I also think, you know, I remember actually a few weeks ago when I was in California having this conversation with a male figure, and he stated that he actually knew a coworker where this was happening. And, you know, the same thing happened. It finally got so out of control because his wife had pulled out, I'm not sure if it was a gun or a knife, it was something of that nature. And he called the police, and the police, when they got there, they laughed the same way you were saying. They physically laughed in his face, not because of the situation at hand, but because this lady was so much smaller than her husband was. So, you know, they thought it was like the funniest thing they'd ever seen, and these were now police officers. So they were even hesitant about taking the report, but, you know, what if, like, it, you know, the weapon would have gone off, or, you know, he would have been cut or whatever else. You know, thank goodness that he was able to get whatever he was getting away from her. But that's when he actually finally walked away from the situation. But the saddest part about this is that the man who was telling me this, he's well into almost 60 years old. He was cracking up laughing when he was telling me about the situation. I just looked at him. And I was like, you know, it's kind of sad. I was like, because you're sitting there laughing about the same thing that we're talking about. And he was like, it's just because you would have to see how big he is and how small she is. So those are the aspects to think about also. But, you know, it happens all the time, more than we can even think about. And just even for this month to think that it's Youth Dating Violence Awareness Month, and that it's also happening now with the youth, and that there are also boys, teenage boys, who are being physically abused by their female counterparts. So that's right. Also another thing to think about, and that's definitely, like, something that's, you know, I'm not sure how they can go to their friends or even go home and say, hey, Mom, you know, this girl is beating up on me or things like that. Like, that's not even heard of, but it's happening every day. As we speak, someone, you know, a male counterpart is being physically or verbally abused by their significant other. So,
right. Yeah, and then that brings us into the other realm of things. You know, we're talking about significant others, intimate partner abuse between, you know, gay partners, you know, where you have two men who are potentially being physically violent with each other. That's a whole nother issue, which is becoming more and more common. And there are hardly any resources. I mean, they're starting to develop more and more resources for male victims of intimate partner violence, you know, for gay men. But, you know, that's a problem that, man, nobody even thought of 15, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, There's so many male victims out there that just are basically ignored and forgotten about and are left on their own. And that's the worst place for a victim to be feeling alone, because that's when you have people turning to drugs and alcohol.
Exactly.
And suicide, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, and I'm glad you brought up the word suicide, because, you know, if you ever look up the suicide ratio between males and females, the suicide between men are much higher than women, and people are always quick to say, well, women are so much stronger than men, but that's not necessarily so. It's just, like you said, with society out there that men are supposed to be. To start with. So then, of course, the suicide rate just skyrockets because they don't have anyone to talk to. So then you do see that where that the homeless rate is much higher because men just lose all control because they keep so much in, and then they turn to drugs, and then they turn to whatever other means they need to because they don't know how to communicate, or maybe they try to communicate about this domestic violence or whatever issue they're having that's just hurting them so bad, but things just got out of control. And this is the only way they feel control, by keep chasing a high that's never going to get replaced with anything else. So you're absolutely right. And if that doesn't solve it, they often do end up committing suicide.
Right. Exactly. I mean, and that's, you know, the reason why we do these podcasts is to let people know that there are people looking at these issues, that they aren't alone, that, you know, we are genuinely thinking about these things, trying to come up with ways to work on these issues, trying to get people to listen to what is really going on in the world, because it is important. And you know, that's why I started the Survivor series, to let people have a voice so that, you know, they can hear in other people's words that there are people who've gone through the same thing that they've gone through, because they're not alone. There are people out there that have experienced this. I mean, if you listen to these statistics, 40% of all domestic violence victims are men, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, there's no need for these people to be feeling alone. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of developing programs and resources. And as you know, and I know, our organizations are working on those things as we speak.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right.
So,
exactly right.
All right. So let's move on to, before we move on to myths, you brought up an important point that I failed to mention, and there's a statistic out there that I want to just throw out there before we move on to myths. One study states that 63% of male domestic violence victims have had deadly weapons used against them. 63% of male domestic violence victims have had deadly weapons used against them, as opposed to 15% of domestic violence, female domestic violence victims. So that's a 50% difference. So that's an interesting statistics there.
Yeah, and it's mind-boggling because, you know, most of the time you'll see women who will go, and even, I mean, as much as I understand I'm a woman, so, you know, for a female listener, I don't want anyone to get the idea that I'm biased. It's just, as a survivor of many things, I also know retrospectively, I know several men, including people of my direct family, who have been physically and / sexually abused by female counterparts. So that's why it's very touching. I'm very verbal and outspoken about this topic, just because I'm quite honestly, Eric, if I can say this as bluntly as possible without, you know, stepping on any toes here, I'm just really tired of women getting away with more things than men. So it's the same thing, you know. You have a woman that might go halfway attempt to go shoot her husband's brain out, for lack of a better word, or you might have, let's say you have a woman domestic violence issue where she takes a gun and she's attempting to go kill her husband, but then she claims that she shot it through the wall because it wasn't possible, right? And then you might have the same thing with a couple, with the same-sex couple, two male victims, two men that are in a relationship or even married now. Many states are allowing, you know, same-sex couples to be married. Then what if a male would do the same thing in the same exact state? Let's choose New Mexico, okay? You have a woman that's attempting to kill her husband, and then you have a male partner who's attempting to kill his male partner. And then you have both of them in front of the same judge. Well, let's say that this woman is very attractive. She's not going to get a lot of jail time, and if any jail time at all, and the jury might feel sorry for her. But then because you have another male here that's done the same thing, even though it's to a male, he's probably going to get the attempted murder charges and vice versa. because it's just the male who did this to his wife. He might be getting 30, 40 years while the woman gets
right.
off.
Right.
So it's just not fair.
Yeah. And, you know, and like I said, our intent with this call is definitely by no means to pit one victim versus the other. We do not want to take away from women, you know, women victims at all. We understand women victims. We, you know, your organization, Femmes du Lait, does wonderful things for women victims.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I mean, I'm a survivor, so.
And we work together, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Strong to Survive is here to help the male victims. And so, but it is important that we shed light on these issues because they are being ignored, you know. They're
mm-hmm.
being ignored. So let's go on to myths now. Let's talk about some of these myths. And I think these are good myths. And when I say good, I mean bad. But, you know, they're good because we need to debunk them. So the first myth, number one, only men who are wimps allow themselves to be abused by women. Wow, that is pretty, pretty intense there. So it's a common myth that men who are abused by women must be wimps. However, nothing could be further from the truth. Men who are physically assaulted by their abusive partners via punches, bites, kicks to the groin, attacks while they are driving, or being hit with hard objects, etc., without retaliating are the real men. Amen to that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It takes a real man to put up with that and not hit back.
Definitely.
I mean, that's some restraint to be able to deal with all of that.
Definitely, because I've seen the other spectrum, so with my own father.
Yeah.
It didn't matter what you did; he would hit right back. So,
exactly. Some men will just hit without any provocation, right?
No, yeah, exactly right. But even if it was provocation, for like my father, for instance, it was just like even more grounds to say, "Well, she did that," and I just couldn't control myself. So,
right.
Yeah.
Okay. Myth number two. The abuser is the bigger, stronger person, and the victim is the smaller, weaker person. This is a big one. You just kind of actually led on to that one with the story you had told earlier. So a person who is 5'4", prone to violence, and very angry can do a lot of damage to a person who is 6'2", weighs more, and is a nonviolent person. Size, weight, and being muscular are not good indicators of whether or not a man will be a victim or batterer. This myth focuses only on the physical aspects of domestic violence. An abuser does not need to be bigger or stronger to throw a meat cleaver at you, rip the phone off the wall and use it as a weapon, cut up all your clothing, threaten to call the police and tell them that you are abusing them. Violence is a matter of personal choice, not body size. That's a good one.
That's a very good one.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter how big you are. If you have a knife in your hand and you're a violent person, you're a perpetrator.
Yeah, or what about the ones when, you know, I know I've known women to attack their partners when they're asleep because they're so much bigger. So it's like vice versa.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just either way, either way you look at it, it's wrong. I know the stories. You know, and I know that it's a horrible thing to do on both ends. So, yeah, this is a very good point to bring out.
Mm-hmm. Number three, women only use domestic violence in self-defense. Victim stories illustrate this myth best. I started the car and she stood behind the car with the baby. Then she put the baby on the ground behind the car where I couldn't see her so I wouldn't leave. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my
goodness. Here's another story. She was high on cocaine when she knifed me in the stomach. I was in the hospital for 2 weeks recuperating from my injuries. The cops asked if I wanted to press charges, and I said no because I couldn't put the mother of my child in jail. The court ordered us to take classes. My educational classes were supposed to be for victims of domestic violence, and she was supposed to go to a class for abusers. After the first class I went to, I realized that I was sent to a batterer's intervention program. I never even defended myself, let alone abused anyone. I don't understand why they had me go to those classes. I was told I would learn how to not be a victim, but that's not what was going on in that class.
Oh my goodness, how sad.
This happens a lot.
Wow.
He's a man, so he needs to go to the batterer class.
Wow, how sad.
I think I've got some more myths than I have listed here. I want to read them. Hold on a second. Let's see. Number 4. If the abuse was that bad, he would leave, because a man can easily leave a relationship. Oh, this is one of my favorite ones. Battered men report many incidences of unprovoked physical attacks. By not holding women accountable for the violence they perpetrate, we are telling women and children that it is okay to use violence if you are a female and that there are no consequences for your violent actions. Most victims actually minimize the violence that happens to them because of the guilt, shame, and self-blame attached to victimization, and because others do not believe them or refuse to listen. Leaving is often the hardest thing for a victim to accomplish, and it's completely harder than staying. Abusers may threaten their victims with more violence, including murder threats, and telling them that they will call the police and report domestic violence against them. For the most part, incidents of domestic violence have been found to increase in severity when a victim leaves. Leaving an abusive situation requires resources such as money, housing, transportation, and support structures, all of which may have been eroded by life with an abuser. So it's the same thing that happens with women, right?
Wow, absolutely.
Okay, so here's number five, all domestic violence programs offer the same services to both female and male victims of intimate partner violence.
Oh, goodness. That's completely false.
All right, so here we go. So this is off of a website. In our search for resources for our helpline callers, we have surveyed a number of domestic violence shelter programs throughout the country. Over the last 3 years, by email, phone, and fax, to see what services are offered to male victims, and below are excerpts from some of the responses we received. This is going to be shocking, probably for a lot of our listeners. We have very few resources for men and have received very few calls, varies in all caps. We refer callers to the Salvation Army for shelter. Next one. We only offer services to women 18 and over and their children. We often get calls on our crisis line requesting shelter services for abused men. We are a dual agency that provides services for sexual assault victims and battered women. Our shelter support services is only for women and children. We provide services for any victim of domestic violence, male or female. Shelter services are for women and their children only at this time due to funding regulations. In an extreme emergency, we may be able to provide temporary motel shelter, but probably only for one night. We do not support services to male victims. We only work with women and children. Many programs responded that they do offer all the same services regardless of gender or sexual orientation, but then went on to write that they do not offer shelter or support groups for males.
Wow.
So this is a problem.
This is a huge problem. And like I said, male victims are always the forgotten one. And that shows it right there. Those are never things that, thank goodness that's something that you've been building on, Eric. But other than that, it's not something society thinks about, even with domestic violence shelters. Wow, this is really a true reality check.
Right. Myth number 6. Male victims are so rare that there is no need to make shelter and services available for them. Hardly any men call the domestic violence hotlines for women. All right, let's see how this is debunked. Critics pointed out that although many women were coming to shelters for protection from partner abuse, no men were seeking such shelter. But a recent study showed that 70 out of 434 men called a hotline seeking shelter services. So 70 out of 434 that called were seeking shelters. Most of the programs that responded to the request for information via the survey wrote that they may, in an emergency situation, pay for a hotel room for 1 to 2 days, and then they would refer them to a homeless shelter for housing.
Oh, how sad.
What if they have children with them?
Wow.
I mean, you're going to send them to a homeless shelter with their kids?
Wow.
Just makes my heart hurt.
Yeah, definitely.
So those are the myths surrounding male domestic violence. There's a couple more, but we kind of went over most of them already, so I'm just going to stop there. And I want to spend some time talking about safety and how to keep yourself safe if you are a victim of domestic violence, because I think it's really important, especially for the people that are listening. Listening to the call, excuse me. So there's a lot of things that you can do to keep yourself safe. If you're in a dangerous situation, you know, I mean, I know we painted a pretty stark picture about what resources aren't available, and I know that things are changing rapidly, and there are more people wising up to the fact that there need to be resources for men. Our organization, Strong to Survive, you can find us at www.strong2survive.org, strong2survive.org. We can put you in touch with people. We're also available via email, info@strong2survive.org, and on Kick at strong2survive, and on Twitter at strongtosurvive. Just if you need to talk to somebody, we're here. We'll believe you. We'll listen to you. We'll try to put you in touch with somebody that can help you. So I don't want you to feel like there isn't hope, because there is hope. If you're listening to this, I just want, you know, you guys to know that there is hope out there. And there may be resources in your area that are willing to help. But there are things that you can do as well to keep yourself safe. If you can't find a shelter, you know, try to have a plan. That's the biggest thing that will save your life. You know, try to have a plan of escape, whether it's saving money so that you have a way to get out secretly, or having a friend that, you know, or a family member that you can go to in a crisis that your abuser doesn't know about. But let's go through these safety tips, and then Julie, feel free to jump in whenever you want, okay?
Okay. Sounds good.
So when dealing with your abusive partner, leave if possible. Be aware of any signs that may trigger a violent response from your partner or spouse, and be ready to leave quickly. So that means having a bag packed that's hidden away. Of course, you don't want them to find it, because that could trigger a violent response. If you need to stay to protect your children, call emergency services. The police have an obligation to protect you and your children, just as they do for a female victim. excuse me.
And
Julie,
I just wanted to jump in for that point. Like, you know, we talked about, I don't know, for those, you know, somebody just tuning in, or might just be thinking that if you're a male victim, and you might just be laughing out loud and just saying, yeah, right, you know, they're never going to believe me. If, you know, you do call police or law enforcement to come assist you, and they laugh or they don't respond the way they're supposed to, or you just think it's a joke, then go above them. And if you're not heard there, then go to their officials, and just don't stop there until your voice is truly heard. Because part of demobilizing yourself from being a victim to surviving to a survivor type mindset, and especially if you have your children, you know, you want to break that cycle. You don't want your sons or your daughters even to think that it's okay. Like for me, for instance, you know, a few years back, I thought that that kind of violence was okay. I didn't know any different because that's all I had ever witnessed. Okay, but you do not want that for your own children. So you have to break that cycle now, and you have to show them. Show them the right way. You as a father, it's your responsibility. If you have children, to break that cycle, to not let the abuse continue with you, and to get the help that you need. So if, you know, you're calling law enforcement, they're laughing or hanging up or whatever the situation may be. If you're in a little town or big city, it does not matter. There will be someone who will listen to you. As Eric mentioned, if no one does, you know, Eric or one of our team members will, and we'll make sure to get you into the right direction that you need, but it's up to you to take those steps. No one else can take those steps for you.
Absolutely. I think that's really key, and if you need to seek legal representation to get the police to take you seriously, then that might be the case that you need to go. The route that you need to go to get that to happen. Unfortunately, you know, it may take that severe of an action to change the mindset of the legal profession and the law enforcement, you know. But, hey, it always has to start somewhere. Okay. Thank you, Julie. Thank you for pointing that out. Mm-hmm. Never retaliate. An abusive partner will often try to provoke you into retaliating or using force to escape the situation. If you do retaliate, you'll almost certainly be the one who is arrested. I would say not almost certainly, you will be the one who is arrested and removed from your home. They will definitely, I mean, that will be the end of it. If you retaliate, that's the end. It's over. You're the abuser at that point.
Exactly right.
Unfortunately.
And that's I don't know how many people have had that, but I know several people that have had domestic issues, and they'll say, well, they came out and the first thing they asked was to know that something happened here or there. But even if you're a woman and you hit or push your partner, and then they come in, and then they say, hey, they come in and they say, well, did your partner do anything? Did the husband or your spouse do anything to you? And they say, yeah. Well, they push me out the way. Then they're taking, you know, in most states, I know in Tennessee now, if it's a domestic situation, they take both male and female to jail. But in some states, like you said, it'll just turn over to them and then it'll be like, well, the woman did nothing. We're just going to take the men to jail, even if it's just as much as you pushing back just because you want to get away from this situation. So,
right.
You know, just keep that in mind.
Right.
The best thing I can say is take your smartphone out and record it. I'm not trying to be funny, but, you know, if you have any kind of recording device, just do it because that's the only way you're safe, pretty much.
Yep, definitely. And that's where we're at now. Get evidence of the abuse. Report all incidents to the police. Get a copy of each police report. Keep a journal of all the abuse with clear records of dates, times, any witnesses, including pictures of your injuries, video. If you use your phone, make sure your doctor or hospital also documents your injuries. Remember, your medical personnel are unlikely to ask if a man has been a victim of domestic violence, so it's up to you to ensure that you tell your doctor what the injuries are from so that they document them. Keep a mobile phone with evidence of the abuse. If there's texts that are threatening on there, make sure you save them. Keep all your important documents handy. If you have a bag that's packed that's ready to go, keep all those important documents with you so that you don't have to come back to the house with the violent perpetrator. Keep everything with you in that bag so that everything's ready to go at any given notice. If you and your children have to leave instantly in order to escape the abuse, you'll have to have that with you. So make sure you keep it, you know, your passport, driver's license, everything all together. Sometimes it's safer to keep them outside of the house, maybe in a storage locker or a safety deposit box. something like that. It might be safer to have them stored at a friend's house where the perpetrator doesn't know about. You know, these are things that you might want to be thinking about if you need to get away quickly. Anything you want to add to that, Julie?
No, I completely agree.
So then another thing is to obtain the advice from a domestic violence program or legal aid resource about getting a restraining order and order protection against your partner if necessary and seeking temporary custody of your children. And this is why it's really important to document everything because once you have everything documented, it'll be a lot easier for you to get the restraining order and to get the temporary custody. Otherwise, without any documentation, it's going to be really difficult because as soon as the perpetrator says that you were the perpetrator, it's over. Once it's their word against yours, if you don't have this documentation, then really there's nothing you can do.
I agree.
Okay.
I completely agree.
Is there anybody else on the call, Julie? Or is it still just us?
No, I know Alex is on the call. Okay. He's listening.
Okay, cool. Well, just a reminder, if anybody has questions, they can press 5-star to raise their hand, and we can take questions. Also, questions on Twitter.
To add to that, since you asked about a caller, what Alex texted, and I forwarded you the text message, but it's a good point of what he said, and that's perhaps something that we could look into, Eric or you. Alex texted and said law enforcement needs to be more aware of the statistics of male abuse victims, and maybe they will take the calls more seriously. So, again, it's bridging the gap of education. You know, how do you perhaps go to law enforcement and say, hey, you know, here's a pamphlet, or can we train your police officers on this, or can you take this training information? Because this is something that keeps getting ignored, and I feel, you know, this is my organization, Strong to Survive, and this is the information that you may want to consider taking on because no one's taking it serious, but look, this keeps happening. So
right.
That's a good point he brought forth.
I like that idea. I like the idea of educating law enforcement. That's definitely something that should happen. Absolutely. Thank you, Alex. Thanks for pointing that out. Here's some more safety tips. Create a code word with friends and family in order to communicate to them that you need help. That's a good one. If an abusive incident seems imminent, trust your judgment. Sometimes it's best to leave in advance. Keep a written list of important phone numbers with you. That's a good one. Consider letting friends, neighbors, and coworkers know about your situation, just in case something happens to you. Let them know what's going on. Change your regular travel habit. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. I do have a question about that. What would your suggestion as a male be? How can another man go forth and do that, especially with the shame barrier of it? Does that make sense? If a man goes over to their neighbor and say, hey, this is what's going on with me, my wife, or, hey, my boyfriend, you know, he keeps beating me up, and how do you do that? Because even with the homosexual community, for instance, right?
Yeah.
You know, most of the time they're not accepted, and in a lot of religious communities, the best person I can think of that points that out is like Macklemore in his song, where he points it out with like religious affiliations and stuff like that. You know, what if this really happens? You know, one is getting beat up and then he wants to go next door to go talk to someone or get help or tell them, hey, something ever happens to me, my partner is beating me up. How do they bridge that gap? Or if one goes to their next door neighbor and says, just in case I come up missing 2 days from now, my wife is doing this. How do you go forth? What do you suggest they do to bring that point across to them without getting laughed at or the door shut in their faces? How do they find that courage? And if they don't have their neighbors, who else would they turn to?
I think it's important to find somebody that they trust unconditionally, right? So I think that's the first step. And so for me, I would find the person that I trust more than anybody in the world, and it would have to be my best friend first. It would be the person I would tell. And so they recommend going to a neighbor or a friend or a family member, coworker. And I would go to my best friend because I know that that person would trust, would listen to me and believe me. So I would recommend that, you know, as a male to go to the person that you know that would take you seriously and wouldn't laugh in your face and would listen and wouldn't, you know, try to tell you what to do or, you know, or anything like that. So if you have a person like that in your life, then that's probably the best person to start with. If not, gosh, then it's probably best to be careful because that could backfire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right.
Absolutely.
So then change your regular travel habits. Try not to frequent the same stores or businesses you did when you were with your abuser. So this is if you left, if you left the relationship, because they can, you know, it could quickly turn into stalking. So these are ideas to do if you left. All right. Oh, how about 50 with technology? These are good. Know that your activity on your computer may be monitored and checked without your knowledge. It's not possible to delete and clear all of the footprints from your computer or online activities. If you're being monitored, it may be dangerous to change your computer behaviors, such as suddenly deleting your entire internet history, if that is not your regular habit. If you think you are being monitored on your computer, be careful how you use your computer, since your abuser might become suspicious. You may want to keep using the monitored computer for non-personal activities like looking up the weather or record or reading the news. Use a safer computer to research an escape plan, like or looking for jobs or apartments, bus tickets, or to ask for help, like public libraries or, you know, things like that. Consider opening a free email account that your abuser doesn't know about and only check it from public or otherwise safe computers, libraries, schools, or friends. Mm-hmm. If you have a cell phone, be aware that even calls are toll-free are likely will likely show up on your phone bill, especially if you're on a joint plan. Consider making calls to shelters, lawyers, or other confidential services from payphones or prepaid cell phones. There's also Google Talk. You can get a Google, if you have a smartphone, you can get a Google phone number, and you can use that to make phone calls, and they won't show up on your phone phone bill. So let's see. Call your local domestic violence program and ask them about free cell phone programs. Usually these phones will allow you to dial 911. Cool.
Yeah. And also to add to that, Eric, another good text message that I got was from Alex. He also said, you know, journaling, which we kind of sort of hinted on earlier, making sure we document everything. But for, you know, male survivors, even if you're at work, you know, you can keep something there since, you know, if you have a wife or significant other, you know, most of the time they know where your things are. So documenting that way would be, you know, yeah, journaling is a very great, you know, keep your date, your time, when the domestic violence occurred or whatever incident, even verbal abuse, you know, something that people don't realize that abuse used to start verbally. You know, if you're being mistreated verbally and psychologically, that's just as much as abuse as it is physically.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, we are coming up on the end of the call here, and we've gotten through almost everything, and I think we're getting into resources now. Let me see here. So resources, as we talked about, there are a few resources available as far as shelters and things go, but it's important to ask anyway, because I think the more we ask, the more that the need is communicated, the more that people will realize that there is a need. And, you know, our organization is working on creating infrastructure for male victims in the form of shelters and resources so that, you know, we can eventually fill that need, hopefully nationwide in the future. It is a long road, but we're definitely looking at that, and we're looking at it seriously, and it's something that we definitely want to do. And so Julie and I will be partnering up on that, and we definitely want to make that a reality. But for now, there are a couple of phone numbers that you can dial in the meantime. 1-800-7-HELPLINE, the National Domestic Violence number, and they do take calls from male victims. 1-800-7-HELPLINE. And for lesbian, gay, and bi and transgendered victims, 1-800-832-1901. 1-800-832-1901. You can also reach out to us. You can kick us, K-I-K, kick, at Strong2Survive, Strong, the number 2, Survive. You can reach us on Ask at Fem, ask.fm/Strong2Survive. You can email us. Our email is info@Strong2Survive.org. Our website is www.Strong2Survive.org. You can also reach SDIAG. Do you want to give the info for SDIAG, Julie?
Yeah, sure. For our information, you can reach us the same. It's at info@sdiag.us. And you can always kick us also, which is SDIAG_ORG. That will be our kick account. And, you know, we're always here for you all also, but we'll always, you know, refer you back also, especially specifically if you're a male victim in need. You know, Eric will always be the best resource in that aspect also.
Yeah, but definitely for female victims, and you want to reach out to SDIAG. And how about the website for SDIAG?
Yeah, it is SDIAG.org.com.
Perfect. And just for all our listeners, just so you know, if you are interested, we are looking for, actively seeking advocates, male advocates, to work with male victims, and in all 50 states of the United States. So if you're interested, you can email us, you can tweet us, you can Instagram us, you can kick us, you can ask FM us, you can find us in any of those, you can get us on the website as well. So if you're interested in volunteering with us, we would love to have you. We provide training as well. If you're interested in telling your story on our podcast, we would love to have you. And if you just want to reach out and talk, then we're definitely here for you as well. So, Julie, I still want to thank you for joining our call tonight. I thank you for your input. I really enjoyed having you on the call, and I really
appreciate it. No, thank you for having me.
I think we talked about some good stuff here, and it's definitely been a joy.
Definitely. And retrospectively, I just want to throw out here also for the female abuser, if, you know, that calls out to you, I completely can understand that aspect of it also, especially if it's something you've witnessed as a child and you want to get help, then reach out to us as well. If you just say, you know what, I don't want my marriage or my relationship to just fall and I want to change, you know, you could be the abuser listening. We want to be able to help you also, so just keep that in mind.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. Well, that's all the time we have. And thank you for listening. And we look forward to catching up with you guys on our next podcast.
All right. And always thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.